Keddy, California, located in Plumas County. It's about 225 miles from San Francisco, a drive time of approximately 4 hours. In 2020, the population was 76. It probably hasn't changed much since then. Keddy was named after a railroad surveyor named Arthur Keddy. The Sierra Mountain Resort was founded in 1910, where you could rent one of 33 cabins or a room in a two-story lodge. The restaurant at the lodge served food like barbecued bear ribs, raccoon steaks, and fancy wines. It was regularly frequented by people all over Northern California. 71 years later, on Saturday, April 11th, 1981, one of the cabins, number 28, was the scene of a horrific murder of three people and a missing 13-year-old. For context and reference, let's check out other events that happened around that time. On April 12th, NASA launched the first space shuttle named Columbia. On April 24th, IBM introduced the personal computer. And on April 29th, Peter Sutcliffe confessed that he is the Yorkshire Ripper, responsible for the murder of 13 women. That's probably something we will investigate further on a future episode. Glenna Sue Sharp, who went by Sue, 36-year-old mother of five. She was married to John Sharp and lived in Connecticut. On July 1979, Sue left John due to mistreatment and abuse. She took her kids, John, 15, Sheila, 14, Tina, 13, Rick, 10, and Greg, 5. They moved to Quincy, California, which is about 6 miles from Keddy, into a trailer that Sue's brother used to live in. On November 1980, Sue and the kids moved to Keddy into cabin number 28. The new home wasn't too big, but it was bigger than the trailer. The family was on welfare, but they got by. There were rumors of selling drugs, and that Sue had a lot of people who came by a lot. On the night of the murder, John Sharp and his friend Dana Wingate, 17 years old, were seen hitchhiking from Quincy to Keddy. This is where it gets sketchy. It is believed that the killer or killers were with John and Dana when they arrived home, or they were already inside cabin 28 when John and Dana entered their home. What ensued next was terror and torture. John, Dana, and Sue were tied up and bound with tape and wire. John, the oldest and protector of the family, tried his best to defend them, but he was no match for two grown men. Tina Sharp, upon arriving home from a neighbor's house, the Seabolts, was also tied up. John, Dana, and Sue were knifed and hit with a claw hammer to death. There was blood everywhere, knife marks on the walls, which was probably an indication of having the victims up against the wall, trying to stab them while they were fighting for their lives. It is estimated that the killer stayed for 10 hours, but others believe it was less than an hour. But one thing is for certain, their focus was Sue. She was bound and gagged, using her own underwear. They kept her alive as they savaged her son John and his friend Dana. According to the sheriff's department, the scene was so gruesome that the unfortunate victims were unrecognizable. Sheila was sleeping at the Seabolts when the crime happened, The next day, she went home to pick up some clothes. Instead, she stepped into a murder scene of her family. She ran back to the Seabolts and frantically told them what she had seen. The sheriff's office was called, and they ran back to the Sharps. They discovered Rick, Greg, and friend Justin Smart, 12 years old, in one of the bedrooms. They were pulled out from the window to prevent them from seeing the carnage outside their bedroom door. At first, the kids said they did not hear anything, but it is believed that at least Justin saw two suspects. Rick, Greg, and Justin were not harmed. You would think that a scene like that, the killers would not let anyone survive. After the police arrived, Justin told them that Tina was missing. That indicated that Justin did see the crime scene, and possibly more. Justin Smart lived with his mother Marilyn and stepfather Martin Smart, along with John Bubede, who went by Bo, a family friend. Bo allegedly had ties to organized crime in Chicago. The night of the murders, Martin, Marilyn, and Bo went to a bar. Martin told Marilyn to invite Sue to the bar to hang out with them and Bo, but Sue declined. Martin and Bo were upset, according to Marilyn. Marilyn decided to go to bed early, but Martin and Bo remained at the bar. Marilyn woke up around 2 a.m. and saw Martin and Bo burning something on the wood stove. Justin Smart was placed under hypnosis by Sheriff Thomas, and he said he heard the commotion in the living room from the bedroom, and he described two men that night. Composite sketches were made of the two suspects, and they slightly resembled Martin and Bo. The sheriff's office searched the Smart residence. Martin worked as a chef, and he had a lot of knives. They also found duct tape and a hangman's noose. The home had a large basement and a shed. A jacket that belonged to Tina was found, and it had some blood on it. But Sheriff Thomas, afterwards, did not recall a bloodstained jacket being found, but he did mention the wires that were used to tie up the victims came from Tina's bedroom. The police took Justin's tennis shoes because they said there was evidence Justin walked through the crime scene. Sheriff Thomas did not recall anything about Justin's shoes. He retired from his position shortly after the murders. A shoebox belonging to Tina, used for a school project, was missing. The family said Tina was attached to the shoebox for some reason. So the killers / kidnappers let Tina take it with her? That's very strange. The shoebox was never found. Police searched a nearby cabin that the kids used as a clubhouse. The floorboards were torn up, but Marilyn claims that they were not like that when she was there the past weekend, and the kids said they did not do it. Marilyn suspected that Tina was held there. Tina's remains were found 3 years later, 50 miles away in Feather Falls. Glenna Meeks, a family friend of Martin and Marilyn, described that Martin went to Reno and came back the day after the murders and was insisting that he needed to go back to Keddie to finish something that he started. He said he was high on something, walking up and down the room, and kept saying he needed to finish something at Keddie. Glenna suspects that Martin knew where Tina was, and he left some evidence that needed cleaning up. 2 days after the murder, Marilyn said Justin was speaking with his brother Casey, and he was showing him how to stab a person while saying, "I have to protect Sue. I have to protect Sue." Martin yanked Justin outside and told him he was no longer to speak about the murders. Martin would call the police, providing tips to throw them off. And after the murders, Martin Smart was arrested for getting into a knife fight. Marilyn never saw him again. Marilyn said she felt Martin and Beau could have committed the murders. Beau told Marilyn at one point that it wouldn't bother him to kill a child or a quote-unquote broad. Terry Alger, an acquaintance of Martin, knew that Martin and another guy he didn't know had committed the murders. Alger also said that it was because of a big dope deal and someone was at the wrong place. Dale Meeks, another acquaintance of Martin, was being booked at Plumas County Sheriff's Office. Martin observed Meeks and began yelling at Meeks about dope, and Smart stated, "You know I got her, Meeks, and I'm gonna get you in the same way." In 1997, the Plumas County Sheriff's Office told Sheila Sharp that Martin was dead, but Smart did not die until the spring of 2000. He was remarried and living in Portland, Oregon at the time. In 2013, the case was reopened by Sheriff Greg Hagwood and investigator Mike Gamberg. They both have personal connections to the victims. Mike Gamberg, while going through evidence, found a letter written to Marilyn by Martin, reportedly written soon after the murders, which said, quote, "I paid the price for your love, and now that I've bought it with 4 people's lives, you tell me we're through. Great. What else do you want?" An audio recording was found in the evidence pile of an anonymous 911 call with a tip of the remains of Tina Sharp. It sat in a sealed evidence envelope and never opened. Mike Gamberg spoke with the former therapist of Martin Smart and apparently confessed to him to the murders. In 2016, a man found a blue claw hammer using a metal detector in a pond near Keddie, which matched the description of a hammer that Martin told investigators he lost, and it was being tested for DNA. So let's break down the potential motives and conspiracy theories. Number one, Sue was having an affair with Martin. Marilyn found out and threatened to leave Martin if he did not kill her for revenge. Number two, Sue was helping Marilyn regarding her troubled marriage to Martin. Martin felt that as a threat and killed Sue. Number three, drugs were involved, but no drugs were found during the investigation and autopsy. Number four, Sue was sleeping with men for money. One of the men, for some reason, got angry with Sue and killed her. Number five, Sheila Smart was pregnant, but Sue forced her to give up the baby for adoption. Sheila got angry and conspired to kill Sue, and that's why she was sleeping at the Seabolts on the night of the murder, and she had Tina go home. Number six, Sheriff Thomas and Martin were friends, which led to a cover-up. But why was Tina kidnapped? Was the target all along Tina? What were the facts of the case? Number one, no signs of forced entry. Number two, Rick, Greg, and Justin Smart were not harmed. Number three, an admission of the murders from Martin to his therapist. Number four, evidence was buried. Number five, police mishandling of the case. I feel bad for Sue. She's not alive to defend herself from the accusations. In my opinion, it seems like it was some type of revenge killing. I hope the investigators will solve the case soon. And according to them, some of the people tied to the case and persons of interest are still alive.